Thank you for listening. This is Getting to Know You, a podcast introducing Jewish Federation of the Desert CEO Alan Potash to leaders, influencers, and people of interest in the Coachella Valley. I'm Jeff Hawker, and I'm joined here with my co-host, Alan Potash.
Jeff, good to see you.
I'm doing great.
You look awful.
Summer's coming.
You look awfully festive in your flannel shirt. I don't know. What do you think? It's cold outside?
Yeah, you know, I just worn shorts today. Today we have a great guest, Dr. Conrado Barzaga. He is the CEO of Desert Healthcare District and Foundation. Welcome.
Thank you. My pleasure to be here with you.
It's good to have you here. Thank you for coming. Part of the goal that we have here is to learn about you and the work that you do here in the Coachella Valley. But I had the honor of meeting you a couple weeks ago when you were celebrating the 75th anniversary of, and I'm going to get this wrong, but it's the Desert Healthcare District and Foundation event, which was beautiful. It was a beautiful event, and congratulations on that milestone. Not many people have 75 years of anything, so congratulations on that. But you look a lot younger than 75.
I was very little when we started.
So tell me a little bit about you and the health district. How did you get here? What do you think of being here? And anything that you want to share about the experience?
So I'm a physician by training. I have been a doctor for almost 30 years. I was trained and educated in Cuba and other countries abroad. I lived in Argentina and Bolivia. I worked with the ministries of health in Bolivia and with Doctors Without Borders to develop healthcare infrastructure for traditionally underserved, isolated communities. And I have been working in public health here in the United States for the last 20 plus years. And this opportunity came about the Desert Healthcare District. And I applied. The board had a very lengthy process of selection, and I had the privilege of being selected to work with this community of the desert, which is a beautiful community. I had been coming to the Coachella Valley, accompanying my wife for work for many, many years, and sometimes we spent vacation time in Palm Springs. So I was familiar with the area. I was familiar with some of the challenges, and some of those challenges arise from the fact that this is a community that is growing. And when you have a growth that is not very organic, you can see that what we see. So we have very high-end development in the southern part of the Coachella Valley, in areas like Rancho Mirage, like Palm Springs, Palm Desert, La Quinta. And you have communities that provide services to those that are moving into those high-end communities, and they're being displaced farther away from the more developed, more resource-rich areas. And therefore, you see how sprawling is the peripheries of the Coachella Valley. You see how Desert Hot Springs, how Coachella, how the unincorporated areas of the Coachella Valley are growing significantly in communities that are low resourced, where they are facing the worst of the pollution, the environment, and very little access to healthcare and other services. So that represents a significant challenge for the Desert Healthcare District and Foundation. And that's what we are trying to tackle.
So I think one of the interesting things that I've learned in this short time that I've been here is that this area is going to grow dramatically over the next 25 years. And knowing that you're responsible for the healthcare for the Desert Healthcare District, and again, forgive me if I, you know, bungle up those words and the idea, but I understand conceptually what it's about. How are you able to strategically plan for the growth of people coming here, knowing already that there's such a demand for the services?
So being 75 year old as an organization, it gives us some perspective and humility. We know that there are no short-term solutions. We have to have long-term vision and long-term planning, and realize that also over the last 75 years, healthcare has changed. Mm-hmm. Remember, most of all, don't remember, right? But 50 years ago, if you got sick, you probably ended up in a hospital. If you had surgery, you had to expect that you were going to have the surgery. You were probably going to be in the hospital 3, 4, 5 days before the surgery. Then you had the surgery, and then you had to spend another 2 weeks right. in the hospital recovering from surgery. Nowadays, you don't even go into a hospital to have a surgery. You walk into a surgical center at 6 a.m, and by 11 a.m., you're back home. And so we need to think of contemporary solutions to how we are providing healthcare services. The other important aspect of this is thinking, what can we do to prevent illness? What can we do to have better quality of life that requires less healthcare services, less hospitalization, and less utilization of a healthcare infrastructure that is hospital-based? Today, I think we need to look at democratizing access to healthcare, building a more nimble mm-hmm. and more spread out, more accessible healthcare infrastructure, where the focus is preventive medicine, primary care medicine, and basic services.
So in order to do that, excuse me for a second, Jeff, it's education to the community. So it's intervention before the actual need is there. So that's a huge challenge. How many facilities are you responsible for is one question. And then really, what's the plan to provide the educational needs to be able to have the prevention? And then I'll let Jeff jump in for a second.
So we are responsible for one facility only, and that's a regional medical center. That is the hospital that we built back in the 1950s, and that we continue to grow through the 60s and 70s. It's a wonderful asset. It's the only public hospital we have in the Coachella Valley. It's a high quality hospital where most children that are born in the Coachella Valley are born, and we're very proud of that. We also realize that when the district was formed in 1948, the population of Palm Springs was about 12,000. So, and we were responsible for that population. So Rancho Mirage, Desert Hot Springs, neither of those cities existed. And now we are responsible, especially after we were expanded to cover the entire Coachella Valley, we are responsible for about 500,000 people.
So knowing that it's in Palm Springs and your reach is throughout the Coachella Valley, if you live in Coachella, it's a 45-minute drive to the hospital. So how do you make the services available to people out there?
So I think that the partnerships that we have built and that we continue to build with primary care service providers, especially in those areas where, as you might know or anticipate, most of the community or a large portion of the community relies on Medicaid for mm-hmm. their services. And we know that Medicaid provides very limited funding for the traditional healthcare that you and I access. And so we work with federally qualified health centers, which are medical centers that are sponsored, subsidized by the federal government, and that are dedicated to providing healthcare services to the traditionally underserved mm-hmm. community members and those that are insured by Medicaid. So that is a partnership that we have built over time and that we will continue to support, so that those that have the highest or the greatest need for access to health services can have them, and that they can have those services where they live. At the same time, I believe it is very important that we continue to modernize our hospital, that we work on the seismic compliance. That's a big issue for all the hospitals in the state of California, and that we preserve the infrastructure that we started building in the 1950s for many generations that will come after us.
So you talk about the seismic preparation. I'm going to let Jeff have his question in, and I'll get to that in a second. But go ahead, Jeff, with your question.
Well, you've recently launched a mobile unit. Tell us about what communities that goes into and what it serves, but also what kind of education and what does it do to help the public?
So the mobile unit is actually a partnership with the Coachella Valley Resource Conservation District. They saw the response that the Desert Healthcare District organized at the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, when we mobilized many local nonprofit organizations and we worked with the County of Riverside to deliver healthcare services, and the most important component of that was access to vaccination for people who didn't have the flexibility that you and I have to go to a convention center from 8 to 5. Right. Or to have access to a computer and make an appointment easily from the comfort of our homes. So we worked with many civil actors. We worked with businesses. We know that our valley depends a lot on the agricultural industry, the service industry. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we worked with those employers to bring healthcare services to farm workers at packing houses and fields and vineyards, and also with employers, with some hotels and casinos, to bring also vaccination to the workforce that it's there and that didn't have, again, the flexibility of making an appointment from the comfort of their home with a computer and mm-hmm. and going from a site that was organized by the county from 8 to 5. So we were doing vaccination after hours, on weekends, at parks, churches, places of employment. And when the Coachella Valley Resource Conservation District saw that work, they approached us and they said, we want to support what you are doing. And I think it's a great partnership for two special districts, in this case, the Coachella Valley Resource Conservation and the Desert Healthcare District, to fund together the first mobile clinic that we have, and that it's delivering healthcare services to farm workers on those fields and packing houses. But it's not only that. We're also serving the homeless people that are living under very difficult conditions, fighting mental illness and isolation. And we're also serving the school districts, because we get phone calls from everyone who needs some healthcare services. And one challenge that we have in the schools, as you might know, is because we don't have a robust healthcare infrastructure outside of what it's hospitals only, many children are not getting the vaccines that they need. They're not getting the medical checkups that they need. So with that mobile unit, and in partnership with DPMG Health, which is a residency program out of Desert Regional Medical Center, we have used that mobile clinic to have those residents, those physicians, and also nurses from Cal State San Bernardino going to different sites and providing healthcare services there. This also serves as a wonderful education opportunity for those doctors that are being trained in the residency program, because
and get experience.
Exactly.
As well.
They're getting that experience, they're getting exposed to the reality of many community members that are facing challenges. Like if we see, especially in the older population, we see isolation, we see loneliness, and having the opportunity to interact with a doctor, with a human being, that it's coming to take care of them, is really enriching. It's a healing process. And for the doctors, it's exposing them to a reality that they probably don't see at the hospital. And that makes them more sensitive to the patients that they will see once they graduate and they either establish their own practice or they go to work for a clinic or a hospital or healthcare system. They will be more sensible or sensitive to the needs of those community members.
So can I ask a couple of technical questions?
Yes.
So you're CEO of an organization. What's the budget that you work with?
We work with a budget that it's about $10 million a year. We grant about $6 million a year to the local nonprofit organizations. We have a strategic plan that helps guide where we allocate the funding. As you know, $6 million might sound like a lot of money, but it's really limited resources when you're thinking of all the needs of half a million people in the Coachella Valley. So we have to be very strategic on where we allocate those resources. So our two main goals, looking at the Coachella Valley, is building a stronger healthcare infrastructure for primary care and specialty care. And the second one is building a more connected and stronger healthcare infrastructure to access mental health, behavioral health services.
The looking to the future then, if you're operating with a $10 million budget now, how are you anticipating the need and where are those resources coming from to be able to meet your goals for the next 10, 20 years?
So as you see in our name, we are the Desert Healthcare District and the foundation. So the foundation serves as that magnet to attract outside dollars, donations. In fact, over the last 4 years that I have been here at the Desert Healthcare District, we have managed to capture about $4.5 million. And we use that money to leverage the district right. money. So it acts as a multiplier. It helps the community get more access, more resources. And that's the beauty of having the district and the foundation together under the same governance, under the same transparency mm-hmm. structures that we have as a government entity. And the community is very grateful because they can see that we are taking money, but that money is not to enrich the foundation or to enrich anyone at the district. It's money that goes directly to our community partners.
So it's a reinvestment in the community.
Exactly.
Do you think that after the pandemic that people are more in tune to their own medical needs?
I think they are. And one thing that the pandemic has left us as sequelae is big issues of mental health. Isolation has a profound effect on the psyches of any human being. And regardless of whether you were young or old when the pandemic started, being isolated, not being able to interact socially with your family members, with your peers, if you were of school age, and also looking around how many deaths we have had, family members, friends that died when we didn't have medications or vaccines to fight COVID-19, that has had a profound effect on the mental health of our community. So, and this is why in our strategic plan, we allocated a big chunk of our resources to mental health. And we have granted over the last couple of years, almost $5 million in grants to local community-based organizations to address the mental health needs of our community members. in a variety of ways. So some of the funding goes to treating drug abuse, some of the funding goes to fund prevention, clinical services, and we are bringing all those organizations together to talk about what are your needs, how can we strengthen the workforce, because we have a big need, a big demand for clinical social workers, psychologists, psychiatrists here in the Valley.
So I was going to just say to you, if you needed a recruitment tool for a profession, clinical social workers, psychologists would be high on your list.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I want to ask a question, then I've been ignoring Jeff. I'm sorry about that. I'm so mental and physical health are very important to most people. But the pandemic really did a lot for awareness of situations. And to your point, you're bringing up the fact that mental health issues became a major issue during the pandemic out of loneliness, et cetera. And we're seeing that with elderly people. But my question really to you is, what did you learn from this experience here in the Valley? And how would you be able to grow upon that if another pandemic came up, similar or even different, but another pandemic came up for us in this community?
So I think there are two big lessons for us. Number one, we need to have a stronger healthcare infrastructure because we were caught off guard. The investment in public health has decreased over many, many years. Prevention is something that neither the state or the federal government or anyone has paid much attention to. We live in a society that values things that you can measure, and prevention is very difficult to measure.
Yeah.
So they say that 1 ounce of prevention is worth 1 pound of treatment.
Yeah.
There are some estimates in the public health academic circles that says that for every dollar that you invest in prevention, you're going to save probably $5 of treatment. But it's difficult to demonstrate that you're going to save money when you're not spending the money.
Right, the measurement is not
there. It's like proving a negative, right? It's very, very challenging. But we know that prevention has saved lives here in the Coachella Valley, and the vaccine program that we have had with COVID-19, we know that it has saved lives. And I think the second big lesson is having stronger partnerships. We have to address the challenges as a community, set aside our differences, and work together to our common goals of the entire community's well-being, because we're living in a very interdependent world. And in a microcosmos like the Coachella Valley, you can guess, we are very interdependent.
Yes.
The West, the East, the North, the South, we're all interdependent. We depend on each other to live our lives.
Any other questions, Jeff?
I was just going to say, we know that other viruses are going to circulate. We know from history. So do you feel like we're better prepared for the next one that will come along?
I think so. I think we are better prepared for anything that will come our way. We will continue to work on our infrastructure to build it stronger. And we have seen the changes in the nonprofit community. We have seen how different organizations that for many, many years, probably for as long as they have existed, didn't like to work with one another. Mm. And we were able to break those silos and bring them all together to play in the same sandbox and to respond with their own strengths to different aspects of the pandemic. For example, when we created the Coachella Valley Equity Collaborative, we had organizations that have promotoras, community health workers, and they are excellent at mobilizing the community, spreading the voice, educating the public, and making sure that they're coming to the sites to get the vaccines and the healthcare services that they need. And we have organizations that don't have that capacity. Their expertise is in social services, and they were able to connect families that were losing their homes, that couldn't afford to pay rent, and they connected them with services that the county had to keep families living in their homes. And there were other organizations that were doing food distribution. Remember, the world came to a stop, and people who didn't have transportation, couldn't go anywhere, older people that were in isolation in their homes, we had organizations that took food to those seniors. We had organizations that were organizing food distributions in parks and different communities. And that was the beauty of having that coalition, because everybody had a different role. Like the county had the role of bringing the vaccines. We had local pharmacies that said, we can administer vaccines. We're here. We will bring our vaccine supplies. Yeah. We will bring our people. The nursing schools, they brought the students to help with the vaccination. The hospitals, the residency programs, the clinics, they brought the medical personnel to administer the vaccine. So it was really an exercise of how the community can come together to address a common threat that we were all facing.
I think that that says a lot about society in general, because the collective responsibility of solving this was done collectively by the community. I'm afraid that people got burnt out by all the work that went into it, and they've forgotten a little bit about the experience. And so when the next one comes, we might be caught again by surprise. I hope that's not the case. And I look to you as a leader in the medical world to keep us focused on being prepared and being able to respond as a community to remedy the situation.
Thank you.
I have a couple of just one trivia question. You said you studied in Havana. Are you from Cuba?
I am from Cuba, yes.
Where from?
I was born in Camagüey. It's a small city about 400 miles east of Havana.
So I had the pleasure last year of being in Cuba for a couple of weeks, and it was a beautiful, beautiful experience for me. But I met with several doctors who were part of the export industry of Cuba. I did not know that part of Cuba's economy was a medical economy where they would train doctors and send them away to bring money back to Cuba. So you didn't go back to Cuba, you
yes,
traveled.
Yes, I was not part of that industry. I graduated before that industry became an industry. I became a physician in 1994. I completed my residency program in 1996. And I left Cuba to go to Argentina to complete a second residency, and then never went back. So it's very enriching, I think, the experience that I had in my home country, because the medical education system there, it's based in public health.
Yeah.
So when I graduated, my first experience was in a inner city neighborhood where I was a family doctor, and I had to take care of the entire community, and the needs were very diverse. So I had people who were suffering from tuberculosis, and I had women who were pregnant and children that needed vaccines, and older people that had other needs like chronic diseases, diabetes, and hypertension. So the experience was very enriching, and I think it has shaped who I am and how I see the world and the sensitivities that I believe I profess and exhibit in the work that I do every day.
Well, thank you. That's really nice to hear. I think that Cuba is an incredible country, and I enjoyed my time there. But I want to thank you for your time today. You're a very busy person. And Jeff, thank you for bringing the doctor with us today.
We definitely want to have you back, because I know there's always new programs that you guys are creating and expanding upon. Thanks again to Dr. Barzaga for coming in and being part of Getting to Know You today. Thank you for listening. This podcast can be found on Apple Podcasts and other podcast forums.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you.